This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Stay tuned next for Positively Revolting Talk Radio. This morning, Annie Haynes will speak with community activists Matthew Bristow, Micaiah Dutt, and Dawn Smallman about Mount Tabor's historic water reservoirs and take your calls. Coming up next, right after these announcements.
Good in the Hood returns to celebrate its 20th year, June 20th through the 30th. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music and food festival featuring a parade, information village, kids space, arts and crafts, and an ethnic marketplace. Saturday, June 29th, Good in the Hood will be at Lillis Albina Park in North Portland with music, and KBOO will broadcast live from the park from 2 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Station Navigator Report, June 25th, 2013. This weekend, June 28th and 29th, KBOO is participating in the Good in the Hood event, Keeping Unity in the Community. The event is at Lillis Albina Park, located on North Flint and Russell Streets. KBOO will be in the parade on Saturday, serving birthday cake at our booth, and we will also be broadcasting from the entertainment stage Saturday from 2 to 7 p.m. Please listen in or drop by the festivities. On Sunday, June 29th, between 4 and 7 p.m. at the station, there will be a meet and greet for Marissa Anderson, KBOO's 2013 Artist in Residence. Drop by for a beer and snacks and say hello to this special musician who is partnering with KBOO. Thanks so much for your interest and support. This has been Lynn Fitch, KBOO Station Navigator.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning, good morning. It's about 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are tuned to your very own community radio station. It's KBOO. You are listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO Portland this morning. And I'm your host, Ani Solamente. This morning, as my beloved co-host Lynn is, well, out sick. Please all send well wishes her way. We really want her to feel much better. And she'll be back with us next week. I'm going to go ahead and guess. Not to worry, though, because I have three guests here in the studio that will be helping to discuss the threat to the reservoirs on Mount Tabor, and more generally, discussing citizen action and what a group of concerned citizens are doing about this threat to our Portland neighborhoods, our Portland culture. And really, you can sort of take that and expand it out to citizen action around the world. It's what people do when they get concerned, right? So our activists, our community members this morning are Matthew Bristow. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning.
And Micaiah Dutt.
Good morning, Annie.
Good morning. And Don Smallman, who works with the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association and is also a member of the Land Use Committee there. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and jump into this. It's a big topic. We've got only about 55 minutes to really get this going and to make sure that the public can get involved in this discussion, because I think that's been missing in a lot of our, how do we say that, lawmaking regulatory processes, the public's voice. Let's start with what's going on. Mount Tabor, it's a Portland park. It's in fact the only active volcanic steam vent in the area. It's also home to three historic reservoirs, and these reservoirs are a functional part of the city's public water supply. What's happening is that, in fact, the city is saying that they are going to go ahead and disconnect those reservoirs from the public water supply, even though they've been, you know, there for over 100 years. So let's start with you, Matthew. What's the background on that? Why is it now that the city is saying that's not working for us?
Well, thanks for asking. The fight's not over, and want to make that clear. The recent city council capitulation in response to the Oregon Health Authority decision was political, not scientific. And the thing is that science and community values are going to win. And we deserve to get the same treatment that New York got. The open reservoirs, they have public health benefits. And we can talk about that as we go on. But there's been a legacy of resistance here. Many of the listeners been involved. And what we need to realize is that just that, you know, we need to defend our open reservoirs and clean Bull Run water from the dirty corporate politics. There's a lot going on, and on the one hand, there's a lot of detail and there's a lot of history, but on the other hand, it's really simple. You know, like you said, this has been working for over 110 years with absolutely zero public health problems. It's elegant and effective, and we just don't need to have our rent increased for something that's unnecessary, and it's only going to benefit some cozy consultants and, you know, construction developers and, you know, politicians.
Well, so you mentioned that this move is more political than scientifically based. Who benefits from this move?
Well, there are many people that do. One example is there are firms. One goes by the name of CH2M Hill. Priorly,
isn't Dan Saltzman connected with them?
Well, CH2M Hill did give $5,000 to the Committee for Successful Children, which Dan Saltzman is the treasurer of, and friends of Dan Saltzman also got $500 directly. Charlie Hales also received $2,600 from CH2M Hill, and this is all Orstar public record.
Mm-hmm. So, Don, as you've been with the neighborhood associations, I mean, I remember I was on the neighborhood association about 11 years ago. And it seems like we were looking at the same thing then, too, but it was successfully fought off. What's going on at the land use level and at the neighborhood association level? What are you seeing in this?
You know, it's been a long haul for a lot of people on the ground kind of fighting this, and it's great to get on the radio today because it's a complicated situation that has a lot of history with it. But what it pretty much comes down to is it's affecting two neighborhood associations because it's affecting two parks. It's the Mount Tabor Park. It's also Washington Park. The reservoir's over there. And so, you know, I've been working more with the from the Mount Tabor side because that's my community. But the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association is not even close to giving up the fight. In fact, we're currently drafting about to send off a letter to the city saying that, in essence. And it's interesting because there's a number of different parties who have been deeply committed, are extremely well-versed in the science, and also well-versed in the political history of how this thing has gone down step by step. It seems to be more grounded in politics. It seems to completely be less of a conversation about the scientific proof that the Portland reservoirs have been proven safe for over 115 years. There's never been any health-related issue at all, ever, with these open reservoirs or with other open reservoirs. And we should say that the Neighborhood Association and a number of really sharp groups are opposing this. There is, if some of the larger groups opposing it, there is a group called Friends of the Reservoirs who've been very active in working on different aspects of this. Right now, they're putting their attention towards congressional delegation help, trying to get them on board, trying to get some kind of legislative fix in the works to this. There's another group, BullRunWaiver.org, headed up by a very knowledgeable microbiologist who's dug in really deep and does a great job of explaining the science behind why the open reservoirs must be kept and why going to the alternate, which is buried reservoirs, imposes a number of health risks that you really don't want to bring into community unless you need to. And I guess maybe I'm not exactly answering your question, but we want to fight with those groups and oppose this decision being made politically. And even, you know, even while Charlie Hales has admitted that, or while he has announced that they are going to pull the plug on the reservoirs and move forward on a $300 million project that he himself on OPB on June 4th said was not based in any common sense of any sort. He said, well, it's not common sense, but this is where we are. We have to hear no means no. Well, you know, New York got the answer no a number of times, and they just kept fighting, and Senator Schumer and their local legislators didn't take the answer no until they got a fix. They got a deferral till 2028, and we want the same thing from our people. We don't want to take the word as no. We want them to listen to us as we say no. So we're still fighting it. We're moving forward with those other groups. There's also a Portland Water Users Coalition, which is a group of businesses that are fighting it as well. So you've got everybody in the fight right now, from people like Physicians for Social Responsibility on one end, all the way to Occupy Mount Tabor. You know, this is a community effort that's widely appealing to people. And so what we really need now is buy-in from the general public. We need the general public to raise their arms up and say, why is our city rolling over to a $300 million debt that's going to be passed on to taxpayers? We don't want that to happen.
So I want to remind people, this is a call-in show. You can join in our discussion here on Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. I'm here with Micaiah Dutt, with Matthew Bristow, and with Don Smallman. And we are discussing the Mount Tabor reservoirs and the plan to disconnect them from the Portland public water supply and the citizens' resistance to that plan. And we'll be talking a lot more about the resistance. I want to also remind folks that you can stay in touch with Positively Revolting all week long on Facebook. You can find us there, facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And of course, we would love it if you would call the studio this morning and join in our conversation on the air. Give us a ring at 503-231-8187. And you too can join in this conversation. A couple of folks have already left comments on Facebook this morning. There's the basic question. Christopher just says, isn't this just being done because of health reasons?
Well, the thing is that it's simply not supported by science that this is being done for health reasons for Portland. So the EPA LT2 rule was in response to an incident that happened in Milwaukee where sewage got into the water supply. So here's the thing. And then
go ahead and back up for a second. For those of us that haven't been going to a bunch of meetings, what's the LT2 rule? Break that down a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's long-term treatment.
Long-term to enhance surface water treatment rule. How's that for a name?
Perfect. Thank you. And so, you know, there's the concern was, you know, a reaction to, like, people died. And a lot of people got really sick. And the response was a one-size-fits-all rule for the entire nation. The issue there is actually really simple for us. We have the Bull Run watershed. It's forbidden to human entry, and there's no livestock or agriculture going on there. It's just absolutely, literally, it's like untouched. I mean, you know, like sometimes the students from PSU visit, and, you know, the employees will be there sometimes. But the thing is that it's absolutely impossible for there to be any, like, accidental sewage. There's no sewage up there. There's no cities up there, we got a straight pipe right from the forest to the faucet. You know, so it's just absolutely very clear cut that we should get a waiver from this.
And the Bull Run watershed is just legendary, you know, nationwide for providing an urban area with some of the purest water the nation sees.
Absolutely, and perhaps worldwide, and it was an amazing feat of engineering and sustainability in the way that it's gravity fed. It actually even generates its the power up there at the headworks. And what we need to do is just make sure the forest is protected, and that means not logging because that would degrade the watershed. And that's something that's in Mount National Forest you have to watch out for, because most of the forest is someone's municipal drinking watershed. And specifically, we're talking about Bull Run watershed.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as other health, so it might be also confusing because the Oregon Health Authority got involved. Well, the thing is, you may recognize that name from the fluoridation fight recently. You know, the director just resigned. There were, like, investigations, allegations of impropriety. There have been whistleblower lawsuits. There have been sexual discrimination lawsuits. So this Oregon Health Authority decision recently came literally the day after the big story broke that the fluoride lobbyists were colluding with the Oregon Health Authority. And the response was like, oh, yeah, we can't handle it. You know, they didn't say it like that, but they're like, whoa. You know, so, yeah, and here's another interesting
thing. You're paraphrasing, of course.
Paraphrasing. Okay. Yes. And that was the second time the OHA denied. The first time, it's interesting, the person I looked into the story was Gail Shibley for the OHA. Guess who she is now? Mayor Hale's chief of staff.
Nice.
If I could interject, one of the interesting things in this story, I think, is that the city of Portland has set getting relief, getting some kind of either legislative or negotiated or like federal or state relief from having to comply with the LT2 mandate as their top federal legislative priority in 2012 and in 2013. So you can look this up online. It's all documented. There's this public process, and Friends of the Reservoirs went to it. I was there myself. And they open it up. The city's great this way. They open it up to the community and they say, what do you guys want us to work on? And they listen to public opinion, and then they take that back and they decide what to adopt out of those sessions. And both in 2012 and in 2013, it has been listed as a top federal priority, like top five, like top one in one of the cases, right? And so it's really disheartening to me, and I think to other people in this movement, that this was listed for 2013, yet we have a brand new mayor who walks in with a ton of political clout, as everybody does at the beginning of their term, and instantly he receives back a no to our second request from the Oregon Health Authority, a second denial for, a request for an extension. And he immediately just says, okay, that's it. He says, we understand the meaning of the word no. This is what he said in his OPB interview the day after he made the announcement he was pulling the plug on the reservoirs. And that's it. He just expects to, like, you know, wash his hands of it and they're moving forward with the work right now. The disconnection is very imminent. People need to really get on top of this if they're interested in pulling this back. And it's just hard to imagine how this gets set as a top priority by the city, but yet Hales actually hasn't done anything other than received a response back and then made an announcement that he wanted to pull the plug. And you know, it's interesting. I know that a lot of folks in water issues, you know, objected to Amanda Fritz's fluoride stance, and you can count me in that camp. But I can also say that she's been working very closely and very hard with all the people who've been fighting this for years. And I know personally from her telling me this that she dug in behind the scenes at City Hall and said, when they were going through their budget talks with Hales at the beginning of the term this year, and said, we need to get federal, we need to get Oregon congressional help. We need to get Merkley involved. We need to formally request it, because they won't do it unless it's formally requested. And we need to get this help. And everyone else on city council and the mayor decided not to agree with that opinion. And that is why on the disconnection notice that was issued by the city, Amanda Fritz's name, his signature is not at the bottom of it. So the pressure really needs to go back on to those city council members that signed the bottom of the letter, even though they will tell you to take it to Commissioner Fish because he's now in charge of the Water Bureau. They all signed the bottom of the letter. And so that's really, if people want to move forward, you really need to put the pressure on to City Hall and those commissioners.
I'm fascinated with the idea that Charlie Hales knows the meaning of the word no, because I think that there's a lot of citizen activists that also are familiar with the meaning of the word no. And what I'm hearing is that there are a lot of people that are saying, no, this is not going to happen. I'd like to talk a little bit about the resistance. We've got some folks on the line. I want to get to them real soon. But if we could just mention some of the actions coming up to in fact, say that the citizens do want to influence this decision and want to protect Mount Tabor's open reservoirs as well as Washington Park's open reservoirs. Micaiah, what do you know about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's beyond time for citizens to begin speaking out. As we know this, there is no scientific basis to this. It's a political decision, and frankly, that's all you need to know at that point. That's all you need to know. So what are we doing? Every Wednesday from 11 to 1, we surround City Hall with pots and pans, and we bang them, and we let the city know that we're still listening. You know, that we're still or not listening, but we're still paying attention to what they're doing, and that we do have a message. It's a very simple message. Apply for the waiver. At this point, it's so simple, it's almost ridiculous. We're only asking that they apply for a waiver, or that they ask Senator Merkley and Representative Blumenauer to formally come on board with the city and apply for the waiver.
So there's an EPA waiver that would allow Portland to continue its open reservoir system. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, and the other thing is that EPA LT2 rule is already scheduled for being reviewed because, you know, as we can see, it's not an appropriate fit for us and also for other places, New York, for example. And so this is scheduled to be reviewed by 2016.
Yeah.
So that's why New York's going to be able to get away, because they already got a deferral and so it's going to get reviewed. Could be like totally revised, could be eliminated, but they're going to be fine not spending any money. Here in Portland, the plan is to, it's like $500,000 and growing, and that's ratepayers who pay.
So there's a Wednesday demonstration every Wednesday, 11 to 1 at City Hall.
11 to 1 at City Hall.
And then July 12th is the biggie.
Yes, July 12th, there's just a bunch of people from the community got together and said, at some point we have to make a public stand and let the public know exactly, what's going on. And to make a stand, in a way against the city, saying, hey, do your jobs. The people are demanding this. You need to understand that. The people are demanding this. And so we came up with the idea of occupying Mount Tabor on July 12th. And there's a Facebook page, and there's all the typical social media. So it's definitely easy to find the information and to get involved. And at this point, I'm me personally, Micaiah, am basically pleading with every person in Portland to at least just study the water issue, because it is just as ridiculous as it sounds. And by the way, I don't think we've said this yet, but I think your water bill will go up about 44%.
In the next 5 years.
In the next 5 years. we already, I think, pay higher rates than Phoenix. So this is beyond ridiculous. When we have water piped to us from a mountain, we pay higher than Phoenix, and now they want to raise it another 44%. And our water's not even going to be, you know, in open reservoirs. It's going to be in closed containers that can be contaminated. You know, I mean, this is really, it's disgusting on every aspect. So I'm pleading with everybody to actually just start studying the issue. And if you feel so moved to get involved, please, because we need every kind of support we can get in this. So
let's go ahead and talk to Cherry. Good morning, Cherry. You're on the air.
Ani, thanks for this program. We've received more information in your 25 minutes than we've received on KABU for so long about this issue. Thank you to the guests. They have a multitude of information. Commissioner Fish, when he voted in the treatment plan on July 29, 2009, said we're fixing a problem that doesn't need fixing, but then Commissioner Fish went ahead and voted for it. And I will digress just for a minute on, or half a minute, or a few seconds on Amanda Fritz. I believe probably in her heart she wants to do good, but she also voted for the treatment plan on July 2009, and which, again, you know, is where the water will be treated when the reservoirs are covered. And we need to ask for that waiver, and we need to put pressure on City Council. The buck is being passed from the city council to our federal legislation. They each say, well, the other one needs to be doing something, but we need to put tremendous pressure on Charlie Hales. Charlie Hales was put in the position of running for mayor so he could go ahead and do exactly this. In 1996, when they were passing the regional water supply plan, and all five of the city commissioners, mayor, et cetera, voted for the regional water supply plan, which says our next increment of drinking water will be the most toxic river in the western hemisphere, the hemisphere of the Columbia River and the polluted Willamette and or the Clackamas. And we will have that in our drinking water if we don't stop this, because privatization is down the road. So your guests are doing a wonderful job explaining this to the public. And I just will say to the listeners, call City Hall. Just tell them we want a waiver for our marvelous, wonderful Bull Run. That there's been no recorded history of anybody becoming sick with cryptosporidium in over 100 years. And it's, as Lisa Jackson, the EPA administrator, says, that science will determine the outcome. And as your guest said, they're reviewing this till 2016. So why is the City Council going ahead at full speed to implement this program? You know, because they're in bed with the developers. And so ask for a waiver. It's that simple. Just email, call, write a postcard, say we demand a waiver. It's our water. We need to protect it, not sell it off.
Thanks very much, Cherry.
Thank you so much. All your guests are doing a marvelous job of telling the public about this. And I hope you put this on tape, Annie.
Oh,
Annie,
you know, it is.
So you're doing a marvelous job.
It is, of course, going to be on our website. It is archived as soon as the show is over, and we can pass that link around to all
thank you.
Concerned folks.
So, thank your guests. You're doing a marvelous job.
Thank you, Cherry. Don,
the caller brings up a really good point, and for folks who aren't really haven't been involved up to this point, we should explain something that LT2 not only addresses whether your reservoirs are open or uncovered, but it also addresses a potential treatment facility that will be built up in the Bull Run watershed. So people have been fighting this fight for a number of years. We're in that fight about that treatment facility. They were proposing two kinds. One was more expensive than another. We ended up with the less expensive kind, which is a UV treatment facility. City Hall has already moved forward in Clackamas County. They've gotten the permit so they could build up there. So it just feels like, and I'm speaking personally, it feels like to me, who's been in this game for a long time watching this go down, the city has, produced a number of actions so they could check off the boxes on the checklist, but they feel like they're not really, you know, deeply committed. The neighborhood activists have put a lot of pressure on them, you know, step by step, and they've responded by kind of doing the minimum. You know, at one point we were denied our request through OHA because the city hadn't demonstrated financial hardship well enough, because that's one of the reasons that New York got the deferral, that they could prove that this law was one size fits all, didn't fit their water system, and that it was such a financial hardship to take this on and pass this on to ratepayers that they allowed them the deferral. So at one point, OHA said to the city of Portland, oh, we're denying this in part because you haven't proven that this is enough of a financial hardship. So $300 million bill that's getting passed to taxpayers, and our city can't figure out how to answer that question efficiently enough to convince someone of that. Things like that are really interesting, but it does bring up this treatment facility as a second thing. So the reservoir is being closed. That is kind of the first domino to fall. But the second domino to fall in the LT2 mandate scenario is getting a treatment facility built up in the Bull Run watershed. And there's been a lot of conservation groups and different organizations that have joined the fight because they have serious concerns about what that means as a legal precedent for opening up the watershed to logging, to building, to developers, to all sorts of things. And, you know, when we've raised these issues like the privatization issue, you know, being billions of dollars in debt, whether that opens you up to water privatization, and we get called conspiracy theorists, blah, 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 blah. So, but the treatment facility is actually, you know, if you ask me personally, is the scarier part of the scenario even than closing the reservoirs is. Maybe Matthew wants to say something.
Micaiah wants to jump in here for a moment.
Yeah, real quick. I wanted to validate some, or not validate, but shows, I guess, sympathy or empathy.
You're
or
agreeing with.
I'm agreeing with. How about that? I'm agreeing with.
We'll work
with the with the caller when she happened to mention that, you know, that's why Charlie Hales was brought on to city council. And I think, you know, I'm just going to just say this. Charlie Hales was an employee for HDR Inc., which is one of the water privatization, you know, one of these giant water conglomerate corporations. And, you know, and so I don't know much beyond that. And I'm a layman, but, you know, come up to your own conclusions, because I think that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, HDR has already had contracts with the Portland Water Bureau, and Charlie Hales is a former employee of HDR. Yeah. That's correct. And thank you for bringing up the potential for logging, because the thing is once a treatment plant, with the potential of a treatment plant being built, what that does is it lowers the need to be absolutely strict in the protection of the forest, because if the sedimentation from logging can be handled by a treatment plant, then like the thing is well, then maybe logging is like more of a, like an okay thing to consider from a point of view of you know, certain type.
Right. If it's in fact the pristine forest that is responsible for filtering the water in our water system, then we need to protect our forest, and that way we get good, healthy drinking water.
Exactly.
If we have other mechanical means of protecting our drinking supply, then we don't need the forest. It becomes superfluous. I'm hearing.
That's
totally
it.
And that's one of the reasons why the place that I work named BARC, the watchdog for Mountain National Forest, has gotten involved various times throughout this long fight, along with many other groups, including breweries. You know, I mean, like, they use a lot of water, even like, you know, there's a lot of people involved in this, and
it's a pretty widespread effort to
really
turn
inspiring.
This off.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and talk to Floy. Good morning, Floy. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Yes, I'm Floy Jones. I'm with Friends of the Reservoirs. We're one of the organizations that has been working on this issue for now over 12 years. We got involved back in 2001, 2002, when the city decided they were going to bury the Tabor Reservoirs, and made this decision through a line item budget decision without informing the public. And so I wanted to comment on the statement issued by Charlie Hales and three other council members. Charlie says that, you know, they've exhausted all legal options, and that's just absolutely not true. The plan has always been to go back to the delegation when we were thwarted in other venues, such as OHA's unsupported denial of the deferral. And it has been a top city priority for many years. We made sure that it was the city's top priority, but the city has never acted on that. They've never made a serious, and I'll emphasize the word serious, request of the congressional delegation. I'm confident that the congressional delegation would get involved. There are many ways they could approach this. You can introduce legislation that grandfathers in our system as being compliant with the LT2 rule. We have a significant amount of science that supports that. With regard to the reservoir piece of this EPA negotiated regulation, it was truly an afterthought. I spent 250 hours at the Water Bureau examining a consultant contract to craft this rule, and I've read every document that's in the record of this regulation. I've read the rule front to back multiple times. There was nothing in the rule to support a reservoir requirement. There was no scientific data, no national sampling. There was a single study, and it did not support a treat or cover requirement. So we have science on our side. EPA does not. They've never made a case as to why we would need to treat or cover open reservoirs. There have never been any public health problems with open reservoirs. They've only documented deaths and illnesses associated with covered storage. So Charlie's right when he says this isn't common sense. Recently, Nick Fish has been trying to protect his reputation by saying this is a solution looking for a problem. But Nick Fish has voted for every single reservoir burial contract, every single one. He's voted for every single rate increase. So this is a problem with our leaders. They have failed us in every way. So they need to rescind that statement that they've made, and they now need to make a serious effort. There are multiple options. They can go back to the health authority. I've done a public records request of their decision to deny. It's unfounded. It's not based on any science. There was no communication between the city of Portland and OHA after they submitted their letter. We're grateful to Commissioner Novick for making the request, but that was step one. They needed to follow through with steps two, three, and four after submitting that letter, providing the documents that OHA would need, taking it to the next level, going to the governor, and making, assuring that we got a well-deserved deferral. Mm-hmm. The reason that New York and Rochester, which is actually much more similar to Portland than OHA would like you to believe, because they have two historic reservoirs that are a bit older than ours, 1876 vintage, Seven City Park. They have chlorination facilities on site. We have chlorination facilities on site. We could treat for bacteria on site if there was a reason to add more chlorine, which no one's demonstrated so far that there is. So there are lots of options is the bottom line, and it really is just a failure of leadership down at City Hall.
All right. Thank you very much, Floyd. Mm-hmm. And excuse me. It is 8:36 in the morning. And we have some folks on the line. I want to invite you to join in the conversation as well at 503-231-8187. You can also comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. I also want to let folks know, coming up this morning on KABU, 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices, guest co-hosts Zaha Hassan and Ned Roche feature interviews with two remarkable activist women writers about their work, the struggle for peace and justice, and their participation in an extraordinary literary festival in Palestine. Also, 10 o'clock brings us a special program, as Air Cascadia is off today. Flashpoints will be heard with the founders of the group Libro Traficante, who are fighting to break the book ban in Tucson, Arizona. Also, day labor organizer Jesus Guzman talks about the Senate's passage of the immigration bill yesterday. At 11 o'clock, Radio Zine, Aaron Yankee interviews author James Lowe about his most recent book, This Ain't No Holiday Inn, Down and Out at the Chelsea Hotel, 1980 to 1995. And at 11:30, Ren Green interviews Don Merrill. Don Merrill is a KABU Arts, News, and Public Affairs producer. She'll be interviewing him about the art of interviewing. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support. If you are not a KABU member, you can become one right now. You can fix all that. Go to KABU.fm and click on the Donate Today icon. Can't miss it. It's a great thing to do, isn't it? I'm Ani. I'm here with Positively Revolting. Lynn is out sick this morning. We wish her well. But I've got three fabulous guests carrying on a conversation about the reservoirs and the move to disconnect them from the public water supply and citizen action to stop that move. We have with us Micaiah Dutt, Matthew Bristow, and Don Smallman. 503-231-8187, that number to call again. And right now we have Greg on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been paying attention to this process for about the last 10 years, going to meetings, going to City Hall, sitting in council chambers when discussions of this and when votes on this have come up. And the one thing I've really noticed and I wanted to comment on was the public perception that City Hall is trying to put out to the public, and that is that they have been diligent and trying everything that they possibly can to fight this LP2 and to save our watershed and to save our reservoirs. And I have to say that having been involved in this and watching this, that really over the last 10 years, the only time anything has ever happened with City Hall and the only time they have taken any action on this has been at the insistence and been at the just to their annoyance, I think, and is their kind of the vibe they give off of the public and of citizens forcing their hand to do something about it. Nothing has been done without citizens asking for it and demanding it, and I think that's probably going to continue, and I really encourage people to get involved. This rate hike is going to cost, is going to raise water rates 44% over the next 5 years. That's going to affect every homeowner. That's going to affect every renter. That's going to affect every person that already can't afford their water bills in Portland. And I think, and if saving our pristine watershed is not enough, just the money factor alone for a problem that does not exist, I think, is something that touches every single Portlander. And I think when City Hall tells you that they've done everything they can, I think you should not believe them. And I think we saw it in fluoride, that our city, with the fluoride vote, that our city is, our city leaders are out of touch with what the people of Portland want. And unfortunately, the people of Portland have to fight for what they want. And as our fluoride fight showed, they can get it. And the fortunate thing is that we do have people in Portland that will fight. So I thank everyone that's going to fight, and I encourage everyone out there listening to join that fight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a comment from Steve who says activism can work. So I wanted to throw this in right after that comment. I think it fits well together. Steve says that he spent an entire year on a neighborhood committee that squashed Randy Leonard's plans to sell off the Mount Tabor nursery, where most of Portland Park and Rec's plants are started. And sort of that's the city's nursery for trees and shrubs and all that. There was a plan to sell it to Warner Pacific College for a pittance so that they could build a sports stadium on Mount Tabor with no parking, which, of course, sounds like a brilliant idea for everyone, right? As opposed to more green space with a nursery where the city can actually use that land. He says that it took about a year, but citizens stopped that. So
I sat on that committee. It when people call us conspiracy theorists when we're raising issues about the watershed being opened up to really bad things and what this means, and debt opening us up for privatization, when I hear people say conspiracy theorists, it totally makes me recall having sat on that exact yard committee that saved the yard, because the neighborhood activists in Mount Tabor started having serious suspicions that they were selling off 8 acres of the park without any public announcement or process. The city denied it, came to neighborhood Mount Tabor neighborhood meetings and denied it, called us conspiracy theorists, until the wonderful activist who recently passed away, Cascade Anderson-Geller, amazing woman who just was committed, tenacious, and elegant in doing her activism work, you know, cornered the city with an actual memorandum of understanding on paper that was signed by the city that showed that the deal had been in the works for 8 months with Warner Pacific to sell them. They devalued the property, brought in an assessor, hugely devalued the property at the height of the real estate boom, and were doing a private deal to sell it off to Warner Pacific College. And it had been in the work for 8 months officially through the city. And they were standing in front of us and calling us conspiracy theorists.
I've often thought that the term conspiracy theorist means, of course, you people that have put things together that we want to dismiss.
Yeah. That's what it means to me.
collusion analysis.
That's also it. Michael Parenti, who is one of my favorite political authors of all time. He's, you know, he's a crusty old Marxist. I love him. Even though I'm not a Marxist, and I'm not a cynic either, but, you know, I love him. He has a wonderful line that says, well, you know, you could be a conspiracy theorist, or you could be a coincidence theorist. And these things, they just happen. People who are in power, they just let things happen. They don't try to work out deals with each other. That's beneath them somehow. Anyway, I digress. I want to make sure we talk a little bit more about resistance. And Micaiah, go ahead, jump on in.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, you know, let's look at real quick, just 30 seconds, maybe look at, you know, what's going on national and international. You know, we've got an executive branch of the government that's killing people with drones, that's chasing down people that are having to speak out and do the right thing. So I've heard, you know, over the last few years, I've heard the term, you know, conspiracy theorists, and I've heard, you know, why are you afraid of the politicians? You know, they're just doing their job. They're just doing this. You know, this is real. This is actually going to put this region in debt. Our government really drones people around the world. You know, there are people who have spoken out against our government who are hiding in China. Let's just think about that. You know, I mean, like, based on the American understanding of things. You know, so, like, we're talking about the most local of the local level here, the city. And we've got politicians here in the city working for large corporations, you know, who are willing to put this region in debt up to $300 million. And that's just here in the city. This is terrifying, you know, when we actually realize, you know, how these politicians work hand in hand with the corporations, how they don't ask for the consent of the people, how they lie to us day after day after day. And finally, people come to a point where it's just like, we have to do something. We voted. We sent in letters. We've called. We've sat in meetings. We've put our work, our effort. You know, we have jobs. We have children. We have spouses, and you know, all sorts of things. We don't have a whole lot of time for this, but now we're finding out that we have to make time because they will not listen. You know, and so that's where I think the resistance comes in. And I think that, you know, July 12th, the city of Portland has a huge chance, or the community that comprises the city of Portland has a huge chance to be able to come out and actually tell city council, you know, what they actually feel about this issue, you know, and show the rest of the city that this is something that we need to take very, very seriously because it is going to put us in debt for generations.
Before we take our next caller, I want to get back into we know the problems of covering the reservoir in terms of, you know, what the public wants, how expensive it's going to be, looking at some process that it has not been good, for sure. But what are some of the problems with actually having our water supply not come from the open reservoir system, but in fact come from buried tanks?
Well, there's some real things to worry about, and if there's nothing that we've said so far that alarms you, which is hard to imagine, but, you know, listen to this. I would refer people to go to bullrunwaiver.org, which, again, is Scott Fernandez's site, which he is a microbiologist, excuse me, and very knowledgeable about the science, and very clearly on that website lays out the science of why open reservoirs are significantly healthier than closed buried tanks underground. And one of the big ones that alarms me personally, and I think needs to really get communicated to the public, is radon. Our radon is really high in the north parts of the area surrounding Portland and northeast parts. You know, that encompasses, you know, areas that our water moves through. Right now, there's a federal EPA limit of 4 picocuries. So if you get your radon tested in your basement and it's 4 or more of these measurements, you're required by law to vent that basement because it's such a health risk to you. There's no considered safe level of radon because it's radioactivity, no considered safe level of radon exposure. So you're required to vent your basement if it's 4 of these measurements. Our water has 375 picocuries of radon in it. So what's going to happen is that means that radon is going to be coming into your home when you turn on the tap and when you start up your shower head. And it's going to be coming in. Radon's heavy, so when it comes into your basement, it basically hangs out kind of in your basement mostly, and you can vent it out easily. But if it's coming in through your taps and it's coming in through your shower heads and it's attaching to dust particles around the house, it's going to be everywhere in your house, and it's going to be very hard to get out. So your exposure to radon is going to go up hugely. All that radon, or the overwhelming majority of the radon, vents itself in an open reservoir. But having it contained in an underground tank does not provide that same benefit. There are small vents on the sides of those underground tanks that do not provide the kind of venting that would solve the radon issue. They more are there for like suction to move the water, so water can move through the system. And the interesting thing is those small vents in those underground buried tanks represent the only history of anyone ever dying from a tank. And it's happened twice. It happened in Missouri and it happened in 1995, and it happened in Colorado in 2009. Birds crawled inside these vents, roosted inside these underground buried reservoirs, and people ended up dying from salmonella in both cases. So it's very interesting. There's this, you know, public perception of like, oh, it's open water, is that safe? But it actually is significantly safer. The UV of the sun can penetrate all the way to the bottom because it's a broad spectrum UV, as opposed to this UV treatment facility that we're slated to be building, which is a much more narrow UV spectrum and doesn't take care of the same thing. So these open reservoirs are far healthier for the public health, and they've proven to be far healthier than the buried reservoirs have been. And really, truly, if you want to dig into the science about the radon and see this stuff about the kind of health risks that are associated with these buried underground tanks that we are about to get if we don't stop this, go to bullrunwaiver.org and take a look at it, please.
Let's go ahead and get Brian on the line. Good morning, Brian. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing all right.
Good. So, you know, listen, when I've been listening to the show, you know, for 50 minutes, and, you know, what I've heard is alarming, and unfortunately, you know, I could just say it's, you know, just part of the way people, politicians and leaders behave these days. But I would like to throw something out there. Most of us out here who really do care do not have time to attend protests. We're working too hard to make not even a minimum wage. And it's very difficult for us to even attend anything or get involved and unfortunately understand all this stuff. But what I understand is my leaders are on the verge of criminal behavior. They're certainly not acting in our public interest. And I think I would really like to see our energy better spent on literally, you know, going down and saying, look, if you cannot act in our public interest, you cannot lead us, number one. And if you use your public office for a corruption on this level, then you need to be in jail, basically. I mean, you know, you are not, you know, you are asking us, we don't have any schools here. I mean, you know, our schools are in danger. We're closing schools. We're cutting back everything. You know, we're cutting back services. But, hey, why not just spend money on useless stuff that is actually going to hurt us and raise our bills?
Thanks very much for making that point, Brian.
Okay. I'd like to hear some comment on that.
Hey, I think you're gonna.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, they're you know, in addition to work and the stresses of life and not having time, you know, there are activists who do make time, and I want to say that it all we can do is what we can do, you know, and we need this is really an issue that needs and requires everybody. I don't have all the plans or the answers. All I know is that, you know, like you said, the leaders are not accountable. And that's kind of, you know, terrifying when we're looking at the debt we're facing. And so I guess I would just ask that, you know, please get involved in any way you can, but recognize that there is no one necessarily movement. There is no one answer. There is no one, you know, this is really do it yourself and figure out what's going on and find the organizations that you're comfortable working with, or find the folks that you're comfortable with you know, being around to study this issue and figure out what's going on. And thank you for calling, and thank you for your passion.
Let's go ahead and try to squeeze in Spring for a quick comment or question right now. Good morning, Spring.
Good morning, there.
We just have a moment, Spring.
I had to have an exhalation there. I just found out days ago about Cascade Anderson-Geller's death, and what an honorable woman. So I just want to have a moment honoring and praising her incredible life. She did many things, including planting the original herb garden at the historical Common Ground Wellness Center. So thank you for all you did, Cascade. Thank you. And good day. And
thank you,
we fight the good fight.
Thank you.
Keep it up, live and local.
All right.
Ciao, Bella.
Ciao.
I'd echo that about Cascade. She was an amazing woman, and I, when I get most frustrated with this fight, I think of her, and it keeps me going. But I also want to say to the caller before, I think you make a really good point, and I appreciate you taking the time to call today. If you can even eke out a few minutes for busy people like you to send an email to Charlie Hales and to City Hall and to Jeff Merkley, and basically, you know, say, you know, you don't have to be an expert about this issue. You just have to say it's unacceptable. We don't accept moving forward with all this work that it's not based in any science. We don't accept that it's okay for you to pass this debt to our ratepayers. We want you to resume the fight for the open reservoirs because they are safe, they are healthy, they are proven to be that for over 100 years. And you don't get to make the decision to quit so easily. If you can just send emails like that, that you can do, you know, late at night after the kids are in bed and you're exhausted, we would really appreciate it.
Let's see, Harry, we have just about 1 minute for you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yes, not only we get our water from Bull Run, we also get it from wells. And our water is treated. And another thing is, when the reservoirs were built 100 years ago, there was nothing around them. And now the city has grown around them, and I think there's security issues of terrorist activity, maybe, or so on.
I've heard that, and I'm glad that you brought that up. I wish we had a little more time to address it, but I certainly have heard that concern. Well, what if somebody was to jump up to the reservoir and do something to that water? So I'm going to, because we're just about out of time, I'm going to leave it there.
Parks around them. Close the parks around them for security reasons.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take a couple of quick comments. We have about 2 minutes left.
Thank you.
They're all under guard. They're all watched. Having, like we said, having underground tanks, they are vented. So if somebody's, you know, was hell-bent on getting to an underground tank, it would be, you know, slightly less difficult than an open tank. So, I mean, this is about LT2, and the LT2 mandate is about finding cryptosporidium in our water, something that does not exist in our water. We can prove it has not existed. Infectious cryptosporidium, there's no evidence of it. This is not about terrorism. This is not about all those other red herrings that lots of people like to toss into the conversation, that if those need to be dealt with, and they need to be dealt with in another way. But this is about cryptosporidium. That's all LT2 addresses.
We are just about out of time. I want to make sure people have the information they might need to have about July 12th. Who wants to talk about July 12th once again, and how people could maybe get involved with that if they feel the so moved?
Yeah, definitely. So July 12th, members of the community are going to be meeting on Mount Tabor and setting up an encampment and going to be staying until City Hall formally requests for Senator Merkley and Representative Blumenhauer to come on board.
And to demand that waiver.
So if you want to get involved, please look up Occupy Mount Tabor on Facebook. And even better, please come down to City Hall between 11 and 1 on Wednesdays and just help us. I mean, show that you want to be involved if you can. And I would just really advise that, you know, this is a really big issue. And like I said, there is no one way to fix this. And it's really going to take each person to kind of look within themselves and see what they can give and do. And join up with your friends, you know, talk to your family and friends and maybe pull them into something that you guys can do, you all can do together, you know, to support this.
Save our water. Help us save our water.
Please.
Yeah, yeah. Common sense solutions for common good.
And is there any contact information that you want to give out here in this last minute that people can join together?
What I'll do is I'll leave a list of phone numbers at the front desk. So I'll just give you KBOO's front desk number. It's 503-231-8032. And just say you heard the show and you want to help out.
And we can also put those contact information on the Positively Revolting Facebook page. Again, you can find us at facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can email us positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. We will have the archive of this program. The audio link will be on kboo.fm/positivelyrevolting. It's a little tricky to find that way. And anyway, we thank you for listening. We want you to share this information, to get it out there, and to stay connected during this fight. To keep our reservoirs as they are, safe and uncovered. Thanks very much for joining us, Micaiah, Matthew, and Don. We'll be back next week. Lynn will be better, I'm sure of it, and we'll be talking with Doug Fine, author of Too High to Fail. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The sound.